Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The, holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. Kings Island is now open on weekends.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, what do you want to happen to your brain when you die?
Oh, God, you know what I would really love?
What's that?
I would love if someone would pack it away in Tupperware.
Okay.
And take it on a road trip. But only 40 years after I'm dead and gone.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Because why not? I mean, my brain might want to see the Grand Canyon again.
Like burpable Tupperware. Like
burpable?
You know how they would do the, like it, I mean, I've just heard that back in the day when they would do like Tupperware parties,
mm-hmm.
like one of the whole proofs that you would, put the Tupperware through is that Tupperware can be burped. Like something to do with like air escaping the Tupperware where you kind of go, you know, like it, you make it open the lid like it's a little mouth and it
mm-hmm.
goes burp.
Somehow that's very 50s. That yeah. and tomato aspic and burping Tupperware, very 50s stuff.
Okay.
But there's, I mean, there's a good reason why we're talking about this,
yes,
right?
Because we were talking about Albert Einstein's brain.
None other.
Yeah. And not only all the weird things that happened to it after it was done being Einstein, but also about some of the really interesting stuff that we've learned from it about everyone's brain. Not just about his, and, you know, what was unique about it, because ultimately it wasn't like super unique. It was a human brain. It's not like they cut open his skull and found like a little crab monster that flew here on a saucer or anything.
No, but his long, strange journey of his brain actually ended up, or it is contributing to the conversation about what is genius.
Right.
It really did end up illuminating some aspects of genius for us, which is pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, because he was undoubtedly a genius. The man was brilliant.
No doubt.
Yeah. Kind of a klutz, but in some respects, but a genius.
Love the ladies, but what are you going to do?
So,
Einstein.
So yeah, he after he contributed so much to the world, he died 1955.
And he just wanted to be left alone in death, right?
So yeah, supposedly that was his big request. It's like, just cremate me, throw my ashes somewhere secret, because I don't want people worshiping my grave. I don't want, you know, any.
He
kind
didn't
want to
be deified.
Yeah, don't deify me. I'm just Einstein. Let me be.
Right.
So he's 76. He dies of a burst aortic aneurysm. And the autopsy is performed by a guy, a pathologist by the name of Dr. Thomas Harvey. All right. So Harvey mostly kept to Einstein's wishes. He, you know, he performed his duties, but he, I guess as he's looking down at that table and he's looking at that big skull
right.
of, well, it wasn't even that big, just that average looking skull of Einstein's. And he was like, you know, it's a shame to let a good brain go to waste.
Right. And it's not uncommon to remove the brain during an autopsy, right?
Right.
So, yeah, you can see how it's sitting out there on the table and he just cannot help himself.
Yeah. Like, I see him, like, about to put it back in. Mm-hmm. It's in his hand, you know, dripping. And he's like, oh, this is an important, I mean, this is our argument. It's that this is scientifically an important brain. This is a specimen that needs to be preserved, not turned into ashes and hidden away.
Right.
I should put this in a Tupperware container and save it and allow it to be studied.
For the good of science.
For the good of science.
Of course, Einstein's family did not agree.
No.
But nonetheless,
but Harvey
took it.
Yeah, and he stuck to his guns.
Even though he got fired for it too, right?
Yeah, and there was apparently later outrage when it was revealed that another person, presumably at the same location, removed
Princeton, yeah.
Yeah, removed Einstein's eyeballs as a souvenir,
mm-hmm.
which is even creepier and I think a little harder to justify.
Yeah, I think I've seen those pop up on eBay.
The eyeballs?
I was going to say you can't authenticate it, yeah. But yeah, you do wonder what happened to those eyeballs. So, yeah, I mean, this is the beginning of what would be a very strange journey for Einstein's brain, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like Weekend at Bernie's, except with just this dude and a brain and a Tupperware driving around the country at one point and doing stuff like apparently Harvey's former neighbor was a famous writer of like Naked Lunch,
William S. Burroughs,
and pretty well known heroin addict, William S. Burroughs,
yeah.
And so they went to see William S. Burroughs. So it's like I'm picturing him like sitting around like playing a backgammon or something, and it's William S. Burroughs, Harvey, and then this Tupperware with Einstein's brain in it.
Yeah, and just to back up a little bit, Thomas Harvey did try to do the right thing in his mind, right? And he, for years, for something like 40 years, he would send little samples off to other neuroscientists.
Mm-hmm.
In mayonnaise jars, because he felt like there was something that could be found. And
right.
for years, nothing was found. In fact, people were like, you know what?
Stop sending me this
because, you know, what we're discovering here is that Einstein's brain doesn't look unique to us. In fact, it's a little bit smaller than the average brain.
Right.
They didn't see much that would tell them that this, you know, some sort of markers of genius until he sent off in the mayonnaise jar. Four sections of Einstein's brain, the most that he had ever sent off to a neuro researcher by the name of Marion Diamond. So she requested this, and 3 years later, because, you know, he's on it, he's on a road trip, it's going to take him a while, the mayonnaise jar arrived. And this was a really big moment, for science, really.
Right.
But still, and we'll get to it, it didn't become abundantly clear at first how significant this brain tissue was and what Marion Diamond found was.
So again, Einstein was a genius. But what is a genius? What makes genius?
Is it something you're
born with a genius brain, or or does it come from like having the right genius inspiring nursery activities?
Yeah, is it acquired or is it inherent? And according to neuro researcher Douglas Fields, genius is kind of a grab bag of genetic and environmental factors. But then you hear from people like Dean Keith Simonton, and he says attributes like your mental energy and your openness to new experiences is genetic. It's something you can cultivate, right? Like mm-hmm. the sense of being open to new experiences. But if you're sort of born with this attribute, then you're a lot more predisposed to go out and explore new ideas and experiences. And we already know that when you do that, you're putting your brain through the paces and you're effectively increasing the white matter in your brain. And it turns out white matter is really important stuff.
Right. And To settle exactly what is white matter and what is gray matter, because I think we've all heard gray matter is used as sort of a generic term for your brain. Like start using your gray matter there. Exercise your gray matter a little.
So you never hear white matter, right?
Right.
And in fact, white matter, some people have made the analogy that white matter to scientists has been like dark matter to astrophysicists or cosmologists.
Right.
And that for so many years, white matter just was completely unknown. We didn't really know what the deal was with white matter.
Yeah, we know it's there, but we don't really know what it is.
Is it
just cottage cheese or what? Yeah.
No, turns out it is not cottage cheese, yogurt, goat cheese.
I wonder if a zombie would prefer the white or the gray, or is it like white and dark meat in turkey?
Well, it depends.
Yeah.
It depends.
I've never heard this posed before.
That's a great question. Let's answer that at the end of this podcast. Let's percolate on that
yeah,
a little
so
bit.
Let's not steer completely off course.
Yeah.
Another way of thinking about gray matter that I ran across was Scientific American had this bit where they were comparing it to soil. They said that gray matter is and this is, you know, where mental computation takes place, memories are stored. This cortex is the topsoil of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Densely packed neuronal cell bodies, decision-making parts of the nerve cells or neurons. Underneath it, you have the bedrock, and this is the white matter, and this
mm-hmm.
fills nearly half the human brain. And this is a really important thing that we'll discuss here in a minute, is that this is a far larger percentage than found in the brains of other animals.
Mm-hmm.
Like humans are really packing the white matter.
They are packing the white matter. And the white matter consists of bundles of long nerve fibers, and they conduct electrical signals between nerve cells, and they connect different parts of the brain together. So it's really important to remember that. Because within that white matter is something called glial cells, and we'll talk about that. But again, Einstein's brain contributed to our understanding today, which is not even complete, of what white matter is and what glial cells are and why they're really important to genius or just to even intelligent thought. I did want to say that Rex Jung, I believe that he's a psychologist, and he said that highly creative people usually have less white matter integrity and less brain tissue in the frontal lobes. And this is important to remember, because when they looked at Einstein's brain, they saw this correlated in there. And they say this could be disinhibiting, causing a down regulation of the decision-making judging center of the brain. So we've talked about this before in a podcast about creativity, is that you kind of have to be able to shut off that part of your brain that is saying no, basically.
Yeah, there have been some situations where the inhibiting section of the brain becomes injured or diseased, and you see at what may seem like a burst of creativity,
mm-hmm.
but it's really sort of like the creativity is suddenly unchecked by this inhibition.
Yeah.
So it's not it's like column A doesn't increase, but column B decreases.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And so it's important to know that if you have, you know, white cells packed in one area, that's mm-hmm. probably pretty great. Like Einstein had a ton of them in the area that correlates with mathematics,
mm-hmm.
but not so much in the frontal lobe, right?
Yeah.
So this allowed him to perhaps turn off that part of his brain that might have, you know, made him feel, preoccupied with other thoughts, and allowed, you know, this other part of his brain to computate at crazy levels.
Like to just throw out like sort of genius stereotypes. Like
mm-hmm.
if you have like the type of person who forgets to sleep or forgets to bathe because they're like so into figuring something out, like that's a situation where the natural voice that comes in and says, hey, maybe we should put this away and bathe, or maybe we should put this away and get back to the other aspects of our life that are important. Like that voice is diminished.
It's the laundry list voice. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And this was interesting. Some of this came out of a panel that I saw in New York at the World Science Festival. And
oh, yes.
It was called The Enigma of Genius. And artist Julie Tamer was on the panel along with some of the other folks that we've been talking about today.
Describe to me who Julie Tamer is.
She is responsible for like The Lion King. That's probably something, you know, on Broadway that a lot of people know about.
Oh, yes. The really awesome like character
incredible
design.
Puppetry, all of that.
Yes, yes.
She's interpreted a lot of Shakespeare works.
Okay.
Titus is one. She, for film and for Broadway, but she has a very unique vision. And so she's gotten the MacArthur Genius Grant. She's someone who a lot of people feel like has changed her field.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think some of her Lion King designs were on display at at Atlanta Center for Puppetry Arts a few years back.
Yeah, and she was sort of saying, well, you know, I'm hesitant to you know, call myself a genius or even define genius. But what she was saying is that in her own creative process, she finds that some of her best ideas come from early morning sleep. And it was interesting. I think it was Douglas Fields who was on the panel, the scientist who said, that is when the frontal lobes are actually less active. So again, we're seeing this correlation with frontal lobes disinhibiting and the percolating of ideas happening. And we're seeing that Einstein had this low white matter in the frontal lobe.
So that's why you inevitably have that dream that is either so awesome that you wish could keep going.
Yeah.
Or is so horrible that you're like, thank goodness I actually woke up from that. Because that's the time when the inhibition shuts down and creativity is more likely to just completely slam you with something unbelievable.
Yeah, and I don't have this confirmed, but I have I've heard before that you tend to dream a lot more in the early morning hours anyway. So it makes sense that, you know, you would remember those dreams. But again, you know, frontal lobes dimmed down, so you can perhaps have your best ideas then. But we should probably get back to white matter in glial cells, right? So scientists.
See, that's my white matter was just causing me to just go off and forget the timetable here. And,
were about to compose a haiku, I can tell.
Yeah.
It was all about like glial cells. I saw you notating it there. Back to Einstein's brain. It's been hanging out for 40 plus years at this point.
It quit traveling in, what year?
1955. He died in 1940, I think is when, or excuse me, 40 years later, 95, he had his big road trip.
Yeah. 96. Yeah. He moved back to New Jersey and he surrenders the remaining pieces of Einstein's brain.
He, the pathologist, Thomas Harvey,
to Dr. Elliot Krauss.
Yeah. And this is because his road trip was not really effective, because what he was attempting to do in this road trip is to deliver back the brain to Einstein's granddaughter, Evelyn, who was not interested in it. So, yes, it returned back to Princeton. Thomas Harvey actually died in 2007. Really not even understanding, you know, that what he did indirectly did have some bearing on how we understand genius today.
Well, he hung on the brain for that long. I suspect he really clung to the notion that what he was doing was a good thing. So
he absolutely did. Yeah. So many scientists at this point, they've tinkered with the tissue from Einstein's brain, and most of them have done it under a microscope, which isn't telling us a whole lot. And historically, neuroanatomists found no clues to his brain, right?
Right.
Again, his brain to the naked eye look like everybody else's.
Because this is the thinking where white matter, I don't know what it's doing, but gray matter, that's where the neurons
are. That's where the
neurons are.
He doesn't have
here.
Any more neurons than anybody else is what they're looking at. And this is the 1980s, and scientists still believe that, at this point when they're tinkering around with it, scientists still believe the important work in the brain is done by neurons, right? These are the powerhouses. These are the brains of the brain, and they're doing, you know, specific things. Marion Diamond, again, she observes a disproportionately high number of brain cells that are not neurons. They're again, what they're called glia, which means glue.
Wow. And we will get to that glue right after this quick break.
That's right.
This presentation is brought to you by Intel, sponsors of tomorrow.
All right, back to the glue.
Back to the glue.
Glue
goo. Yeah. So this glue, this glia, is found in regions of Einstein's cerebral cortex, which is involved in complex reasoning, mathematics, and imagery. And so she's seeing that, like, highly densely packed glial cells. And so this shifts the focus from neurons to glia, and it really upends the fundamental understanding of how the brain works. Because heretofore, we thought that the glial cells were basically just the custodians of the brain.
Right.
They were clearing away like dead matter, essentially, which is like oversimplification of it. And they didn't seem to have any electrical impulses.
And it's not entirely crazy to think that the brain isn't like a perfect design. Because I've heard it, that there might be something there that is kind of useless. Like, because I've heard it proposed before that the brain is kind of like an evolutionary ice cream cone.
Right.
Where each level of evolution
That's
is
right.
just a new scoop of ice cream.
Right,
because,
neocortex,
right.
new scoop.
Because evolution, not to personify too much, is kind of lazy. It's going to work with what it's got, it's not going to... I'm really personifying like nuts here, but you get the idea. It's the process is not going to go back and fine-tune everything. So it's not ridiculous to think that the white matter wouldn't be doing anything. And at the time, that was flying. Yeah.
Right. And it was, okay, the white matter, it must be helping out the neurotransmitters.
Yeah.
Right. And just keeping things clean. But glial cells do communicate, not through synapses, but through gap junctions. It's found there's protein channels that connect one cell to one another, like a spaceship docking at the mother station.
Okay. But it's non-electric communication.
Well, they still don't know everything about glia yet. So I'm hesitant to say that in any certain terms. But I will say that, in the 1990s, you had new techniques that emerged from the development of lasers and personal computers, grafted onto microscopes to better visualize the way that glia behave.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when Douglas Fields and other folks began to describe the glia as the other brain at work, because they were seeing that these brain cells actually were communicating with each other, and they were actually not just communicating with each other, but eavesdropping on neural cells, right? So glia actually sense electrical activity in the neural circuits, and they can control it. And Fields says that if glia can do this, then it's not unreasonable to assume that they are one of the reasons for the extraordinary capability of the human brain, and that ignoring them until now might help explain why the cellular basis for a genius has remained elusive. So what we're talking about here is that the glial cells are giving you the sort of supercharged ability to communicate with the rest of your brain.
Okay.
So it's really... it's sort of like the motor of the, or sort of like the engine of the car.
Okay, it provides the processor speed for everything to come together.
Yeah. So in Fields' book, The Other Brain, he says, here are cells that can build the brain of a fetus, direct the connection of its growing axons to wire up the nervous system, repair it after it's injured, release neurotoxic or neuroprotective factors, plug and unplug synapses, give birth to new neurons, communicate with the vascular and immune systems, insulate the neuroneural lines of communication, and control the speed of impulse traffic through them. And some people ask, could these cells have anything to do with higher brain function? How could they possibly not? That's just how he said it.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's important to us, though, because what they've discovered is that glial cells are, they continue to form until... like greatly to a certain degree until you're age 20.
Okay.
Okay. These, so what does this point to?
That you need to use those, you need to grow these cells when you have a chance. When
that
you're 20?
Yes. And that it's not, 20s? It's not just that you are born with a brain and there's your brain.
Okay.
It means that your brain is developing rapidly still up until you're 20. That essentially that all the experiences, everything that you're doing until age 20 are really going to highly determine the sort of brain that you have for the rest of your life. But, and it doesn't even stop there, but we're just saying that the bulk of the brain is being developed.
Wow. So I dare say our under 20 listeners are doing exactly the right thing by listening to this podcast right now.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the other thing. You know, I hope that you're playing chess. I hope that you're a mathlete. You know, I hope that you're messing around with music.
Yep.
'Cause these are, again, all these things, all these paces that you're putting your brain through, all these new experiences are really helping to shape what your brain wants to be.
Yes. Yeah.
Or what you want it to be, really.
Yeah. Just throw some stuff at it. See what sticks.
And be open to new experiences.
Exactly. I mean, it's all about like, I mean, it's kind of like beliefs. Try believing something new every day, you know? Learn about something new every day. Find out about a different system, and don't like close your mind off to different visions of you know, what reality consists of.
That's right, because I mean, you can actually see it. You know, this sort of this transformation take place in your brain.
Right.
You see new pathways being created. How cool is that?
Cool. Now, what happened? Now, after 20, though, it's not necessarily.
Yeah, it's not all doom and gloom.
It's not like the book closes, because I know the over 20 listeners are like, well, great. What am I doing wasting my time? And they like switch off and go straight to, I don't know, whatever you listen to if you don't want to learn anything.
Yeah.
Just silence.
Kardashians.
Just like silence. Yeah.
Silence. No, I think it's like Kardashians.
Kardashians, yeah.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with Kardashians, right? From Star Trek?
No, yes, okay. Exactly, yeah.
Because I was talking with some people the other day, what if there was a show, Meet the Kardashians? Surely somebody's done a parody of that already. But anyway, for over 20, white matter over 20.
Yes, hope for the future for people with brains that are older than 20.
Yeah, because white matter continues to develop into our 40s. Oh, I get past 40. So, you know, over the hill, not so much. Recent study showed, for instance, teaching juggling to healthy adults showed that learning the new skill caused white matter changes. So just
right.
Juggling alone in healthy adults can, you know, so continue to exercise your brain, you know, because you can still beef it up.
That's right. And we've talked about neuroplasticity before, too. And we just keep learning more and more about
right.
this. And I think this is the important takeaway with this as well, is that we still don't know everything about the brain. We've talked about the Blue Brain Project, trying to map the human brain, trying to figure out, you know, the seat of consciousness, all these really exciting, cool things that are happening. And just recently, we saw an article about how they're using skin cells to turn into brain cells.
Oh, yeah. No, this was a pretty awesome idea.
Yeah. And I mean, basically what they're trying to do is treat Parkinson's with this. But I mean, the idea is that you could apply this to other areas in the brain and actually help to repair parts of the brain that have been damaged.
Yeah, and it also like really turns the whole question on its head that we've asked before, like what happens, what's it like to have a 300, 400-year-old brain? And if we could live to be, like we discussed in 999 birthday candles, if you could live to be 800 years old, would you have like this cranky old 800-year-old brain in your nice young body?
Juggling? Why would I juggle?
Why would I juggle, you kids, with your juggling? You just sit on a bunch of money and hate everything. But no, possibly not, because if you could continue to liven up your white matter, you could continue to have this changing brain. You could continue to have neuroplasticity, well into your, 800s at least, right?
Which makes that proposition a lot better, right?
Yeah.
When we talked about the downside about this is that, of course, we've talked about all sort of becoming, Charlie Sheen's at some point.
Yeah.
We were all given to our demons.
It's like, I will become a horrible person and live forever. No.
Yeah, no. And he's going to pull through.
Okay.
But
I'm glad you believe in him.
The point is that, if this technology bears some fruit, and even if it's, longevity of another 50 years, it's great to know that we have these things that are at our fingertips that are starting to develop that actually help us live healthily, mind and
literally
body.
At our fingertips, because that's where skin
literally,
cells are, right?
Skin cells, yeah. There you go. Nicely done.
All right. Well, Einstein's brain, which is not currently on the road, but hopefully it'll go on tour again soon.
Yeah. And zombies. Did you ever make a decision on that?
Oh, about gray meat versus white meat?
Yeah.
I don't know. Just don't know. Generally, they don't seem to be that concerned, but I bet they're like I've explored the idea.
There's
some
foodie
zombies, and they're going to be particular about it.
Yeah,
they'll sit around and critique the glia cells. You know.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I have some listener mail here. Let's see which one I want to read. Yeah, these look good. Okay. Here's one from Timothy. He says, "Hello, Stuff to Blow Your Mind crew. That's us." During your iPod People podcast, you had mentioned briefly how repetitive music can help during writing. This used to be my experience during high school and college when I would pocket my Discman, remember those, and play trance music during chores. It would cause me to enter the altered state you described where I would tune out and go into, quote, autopilot. The real life would become a dreamlike background in my thoughts. I found that my most creative thinking would occur at these times, and I often find myself stopping to run off and scribble down my thoughts. Unfortunately, like a really good dream, the written version usually lost something in translation. Incidentally, at my current job as a digital artist, I've been known to have a similar experience during your podcast. I'm a science and philosophy nut, so I'd love to hear a podcast about cellular automata, the holographic principle, or the EPR paradox. Thanks.
Huh.
We will add those to the list.
Yeah, we'll check it out.
Well, that's awesome. I especially love the idea that people can listen to what we're discussing and some of these ideas we're bringing up and then turn that into something else, creatively.
I always feel like each podcast has, possibilities with fiction. Like, pretty much any of this. And I think there's actually, is there a film or a book about Einstein's brain being on the road?
I don't know.
I don't know that it's nonfiction, but if anybody hasn't read it fictionalized,
there is a nonfiction version for sure. For fiction, I don't know. I just keep thinking the idea of it like being put into a robot, like in RoboCop 2, where they had the brain and the big machine that battles RoboCop. But he wouldn't be battling RoboCop naturally. He'd be womanizing and working on relativity.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Let's see. Do we have anything else to read here? Yes. Here's another one from Alex. Alex says, "I was recently introduced to your podcast by my best friend as well as my sister, who both swore to me that if I had a podcast, it would be like this one." Oh, good.
Sweet.
"I travel a lot for work and haven't seen many of my friends in months and haven't seen my family since Thanksgiving. But in the last month, I have downloaded well over 100 podcasts from you as well as your friends at How Stuff Works. And Stuff Missed in History, and spent hours listening intently, a couple times actually taking notes. Though none of you ever got to hear me responding to you in my car, hotel, or my tiny coach seat, I get strange looks now more than ever. I feel like we would get along if you could. Though the majority of my time is spent alone and away from home, during the last few weeks I've begun to feel like I have friends with me wherever I go. Thank you all for your company and your appreciation for obscure knowledge. Your friend, Alex. P.S. You two have the best intro music.
Aww.
Look at that. There was just great stuff for everybody within earshot.
I know. Jerry, we're looking at you.
Yeah, Jerry did the
intro music. Yeah. Thanks, Alex.
Cool. So, hey, if you guys have stuff you want to share with us, especially if you have any thoughts, I don't know, do you have a chunk of Einstein's brain in your house in a mayonnaise jar? A lot of them were sent out. Maybe you do. But no, any thoughts you have about the continued development of your own brain or the brains of those around you, let us know. You can share it with us on Facebook or Twitter. We are Blow the Mind on both of those.
And you can also drop us a line at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. Kings Island is now open on weekends.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.